What did visibility mean as a child for me? It meant that I was in trouble is really the only time my name was really called.
Oh, wow.
You know, when they use your middle name too.
Yeah.
Now I wasn't in trouble a lot, so that didn't happen, but there was this constant feeling of, or I'm going to be criticized, or I'm going to be given work to do. And then when I was pregnant, you know, I wanted to hide and all of those kind of things, the shame and all of the things that were associated with, I mean, what I went through at 15 and what another 15-year-old girl going to high school was going through were not even close to the same.
Welcome to Gratitude Geek, the relationship marketing podcast for solopreneurs building lasting, genuine relationships with clients, colleagues, and community. I'm your host, Candace Ridardi, and today I'm joined by Donna Tashjian. Donna, founder of Vibrant Living International, is a life mastery coach, minister, podcaster, and author. Her mission is global transformation. She empowers clients to master life in spirit, soul, and body. With over 25 years of experience, she speaks and coaches extensively. Donna's programs and workshops guide clients through transitions and challenges, helping them achieve their dreams. She hosts You Were Designed for Greatness podcast and has authored 3 books. Clients praise her for turning fear into excitement and revealing truth. Donna's passion shines through in all she does. Welcome, Donna.
Thank you, Candace. It is a pleasure to be here today.
So tell us your story. How'd you get to where you are today?
How long do we have?
45 minutes.
Oh my goodness. How did I get to where I am today? The longer you live, the longer your story is. I was a teenage mom at the age of 15, and it wasn't a consensual situation. So that can give you some indication of what, remember where you were when you were 15? It's a lot.
Yeah.
And so that was the beginning of really having, as I use it today, I understand. I have compassion and also gratitude at a deeper level for where I've come from and where I am today. So going from that scared little girl to what I'm doing now has been a big journey and transition. It's been a lot of learning to believe in myself and my gifts and to learn how to let go of other people's opinions. In Vibrant Living, one of my workshops and programs is called Turn Your Baggage into Luggage so you can have the life you've dreamed. And that to me says it in a nutshell, because our baggage can be used and utilized to be able to help us to be more of an impact. About 10 years ago, how Vibrant Living started, because I've been coaching in other capacities prior to Vibrant Living, and I was working in a job that I thought was going to be my dream job. It was really limiting, but I didn't see it. And after a period of time, management changed and it became awful, absolutely awful. And after a little while, I can't do this anymore. And they let me go. I left the job, kind of a mutual thing, but I felt so lost. You know, those moments when it didn't go the way you thought it would, when you put all your eggs in that basket, that it was supposed to be this way and it's not. And through that process of what do I really want to do? What do I love? What brings me joy? What is the most transformational in my life? Through that journey, Vibrant Living was born. And that was about 10 years ago.
So do you mind if we dig into what happened when you were 15?
You can dig. We'll see where we go with it.
What were you dreaming of being when you were 15 years old?
The only thing I knew for sure is that when someone would ask me is, I know I'm going to help people. And I really didn't know what that would look like. I didn't grow up in a family where dreaming was encouraged.
Oh, that's too bad.
So it was more a survival. You do what you need to do today, and it doesn't matter whether you like it or not. So there wasn't a whole lot of dreaming. All I knew is I always thought a little different. And I was always feeling like I was going to make an impact, but I didn't know what that would look like.
What was your life like as a teen mom?
Does hard explain?
No,
no, not really. I have trouble coming up with adjectives to describe it, but I was able to stay in my parents' home. They provided that space for me. It was a physical space, not necessarily a great emotional space, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
As I became a mother, I was going to school in what we would call homeschooling, but we're going back quite a few decades when homeschooling wasn't a thing. So I actually had my test, this is before internet, my test and book textbooks mailed to me. I would mail them back. They would grade them. They would mail them back to me. So, and I finished high school before I was 17. Then from there, I got a full-time job in my own place before I was 18.
Wow.
So it was hard. There was times where when I was working full-time, wondering how I was going to put food on the table. I applied for food stamps for assistance with food, and I made $1 too much. Couldn't get any. So there were days I fed my daughter and I didn't eat much. So it was hard. It was survival. It was everything that just figuring out how to survive and go forward.
Did you manage childcare?
I paid for it. Yeah, I paid to have my daughter watched while I worked full time.
You know, if this would have happened to you today, there would be no way that you would be able to afford childcare and eat and even feed her.
No. Well, I don't know that I really could have then, but now I think there could be more assistance available. At least it's possible that there's more resources that was available. And there might have been stuff I didn't know about. Because I didn't really have an advocate.
There we go. Advocacy and knowing what's available.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot. So let's fast forward to today and let's take this story, this tragedy that's turned into triumph for you. And let's take this story and bring it fast forward. Right now, there are women who want to start their own business, but they don't know where to find help and they don't know what resources are available mm-hmm. for them. And they don't have an advocate. So right. Talk to me about those three things. How can you take your experience and turn it into something good for women today that are ready to do something else in their life?
Well, I'm doing it.
Well, duh. You know, before we get to that question, though, was there a pivotal moment in your life where you said, I can do this now? I've had all these dreams and now I can actually do them.
Do what dream? What are you referring to?
Your business.
That would have been 10 years ago. And at that point, I'm almost 50. So, you know, but my dream really in the beginning wasn't to have my own business. Even though we always had side businesses, my husband and I, my dream was to get married and have a family. That was my main thing, is I wanted to be able to have a family. What the rest of it looked like, I still didn't know. So I've been married over 38 years. And so I got that dream. And I have two other children. We have two other children and I have seven grandkids. So that dream realized, but all the time I was a stay-at-home mom. I was running nonprofit organizations. I always had a side business. I was always doing things. Not that all of them were a success in my mind, but they were all learning places where I learned how to do what I'm doing today to help me to grow to this point.
Well, that's the journey. Everything that you do yes. in the past leads to where you are, even if it doesn't seem like it's serving you.
Right.
And sometimes dreams change. When I was in my early 20s, I imagined myself on a school board or in a political office, some sort of political, you know, doing something mm-hmm. in politics. That doesn't interest me at all today, 25 or 30 years later. I have absolutely no interest in that today. So sometimes your dreams change, and that's okay too. That's okay too. But I want to speak to these women who are 50 years old and they're like, okay, now is the time.
Yeah.
So back to that question that I had, how can they find the resources that they need?
Begin to believe it's possible, because my idea of what is possible restricts, could be a good word, on what I can see that is available. It prevents me from perspective of something is possible, that the resources are there. I've always been the girl, don't tell me it can't be done. So I don't know if it has to do with my
maybe,
hair color.
Maybe that's something that women that find this journey that you and I are on later in life have the same thing. Don't tell me no.
Do not tell me no. You tell me it can't be done. I jokingly say, you know, when COVID happened, I didn't go out to eat a lot, but as soon as they told me I couldn't go, I wanted to.
kept looking at the opportunities that COVID provided. All these people who hated their jobs could finally be gig workers, right?
there was a lot of opportunities that happened during that, but it was a big transition and a big shift suddenly. And that was what threw a lot of people for a loop.
We're having that same shift and transition now as corporate America tries to go back to the way it was and is discovering that they can't ever go back to the way it was.
Yep, absolutely. So there's a lot of shifting still going on.
Mm-hmm. And people are shifting. And I hate that I'm predicting this, but I predict that a lot of businesses that started in 2020 or 2021 aren't going to last beyond 2024 because they were started out of convenience or desperation, and the drive to get them done isn't there. I mean, how many people start, you have a podcast, how many people start a podcast and get past 10 episodes? Mm-hmm. It's like 10%. It's a really low number. So people just don't realize how hard it is. But anyway, that's not what we're talking about. Unless you want to.
Oh, it does take some tenacity for anything that you really want. I was in my quiet time this morning. I was realizing, and it was like, what do you do in the middle? What do you do in the middle from, I have these dreams, I have these things I want to achieve, I don't really know what it all looks like. And then when you get there, it's like, what you do in that middle place of the waiting, the delay, the, I didn't think it would take so long. I didn't think it would be, I didn't think people would tell me no. You know, all of those things that you don't quite realize, that stuff in the middle, what you do in the middle actually shows whether you're going to possess, to experience, to live in your dream. Now, I'm always in the middle because mine keeps growing. So there's always a middle thing that's still not exactly where I see that it could be. And learning to be able to get the support, get a coach, get someone to help you see what all you're hindering, what's hindering you, and then continue to pursue it. That's what I would say about that part.
All right. We both admitted that we hate being told no. However, when you are in a position where you're selling something to somebody, people will sell you no. Yes. And we have to let that go. So what's your advice for that?
I've learned that people's no is about them, has nothing to do with me. And most of the time, their no's have more to do with what they believe about themselves is possible than it has to do with me. And I tally no's as not yet.
Yeah.
Not yet. Well, and as soon as I quit making it about me, it doesn't hurt anymore.
Yeah. And the no's that you hear that are about you, the ones that are genuinely about you, those are the ones that I can't stand. You know, the ones that are, you know, no, you can't do that. Rather than, no, yes, I don't think that's a good fit for me, said by somebody else.
Right.
You know, I've just, you know, and no is also an opportunity to move on to the next thing.
Yes, absolutely.
However, when you tell me I can't do something, that's, I'm going to say, watch me.
That's a different kind of no. Oh, they're two completely different types, but yes, I'm with you on both of them. And just let people, we spend too much time lamenting on what somebody told us no, or something didn't go the way we think, rather than just continuing to move on. Instead of parking in that moment, what we make that situation mean about us changes everything.
You're absolutely correct. Talk to me about this turning your baggage into luggage. I love that analogy because we all have baggage.
Yes,
we do. We all have baggage. Everybody. I have baggage. And it's a matter of turning it into luggage. So tell us that process.
It's one of the things is people want to say, well, my baggage, I will say, did you have a difficult past or something in your childhood? And they're like, no, it was fine. My dad was an alcoholic. He beat my mom, but it was fine.
Oh, I had a great childhood. My dad used to beat me.
They didn't say great. It's just, yeah. It's fine because it was normal.
Yeah. They don't know that it wasn't normal.
And it was all they knew and it was normal. And so they just learned how to survive through that. And they learned some skills to be able to survive that really don't serve us as adults. They don't help us to completely succeed. So first of all, the comparison thing. Is like, my baggage isn't as bad as them. I'm fine. It has nothing to do with anybody else. Our pain is our pain. Our disappointment is our disappointment. And we all really do have some of something that didn't go, even in the best childhood. There's things that have disappointed and hurt us. So first of all, recognizing, as you said, we all have baggage. And realizing the first thing is that baggage thinking, I will use that first, is why this wasn't fair. Somebody should pay. I've thought all those things. Anger, low self-esteem, blame, shame, all of frustration, disappointment, all of those, grief for things that didn't, you know, grief is huge. It has nothing, it doesn't just mean death. It means death of a dream. Death of how you thought it was going to be. And so all of those kind of things are baggage thinking. Luggage thinking, one of the biggest components is, I can't change it. It's what happened. It is what it is. But I'm going to use this to become the best me I can be, to grow, to overcome. I'm going to use this as if it was my springboard into what I can be instead of lamenting over what should have been or what wasn't. And that is one of the biggest keys. Have you experienced that?
Oh yeah. My baggage was a metastatic breast cancer diagnosis, mm-hmm. 9 years ago or 8 years ago. And, you know, life expectancy was 5 years and I was, no, that's not, I'm not going to accept that. I'm going to use this as an opportunity to do the things that I've always wanted to do. For 15 years before that cancer diagnosis, people always ask me, Candace, why don't you teach people how to do what you do? This was years before the term business coach was even something people even talked about. Mm-hmm. Like, we had a business coach come into our office when I worked in corporate America. And they basically taught us the four quadrants. This is, you know, important, not important. You know, those quadrants. But that wasn't what these people were asking me. These women, mm-hmm. who are watching me build this business that I was building, they wanted to know how I was doing it. And I was like, oh, I don't know how to teach that. But then after the cancer diagnosis and the metastatic breast cancer diagnosis, I was like, I do know how to teach this. And people want to know. So I'm going to use this opportunity to teach as many people as I can how to build a business the way that I did, completely on the internet. And, you know, it's fantastic. And, you know, I think it also pushed me to do things like move to Michigan, mm-hmm. you know, and make sure that my daughter went to grad school. Mm-hmm. You know, that things that might have been a little harder before became easier because I have an expiration date.
Yes.
I don't know what it is. It could be 40 years, but yes. I do have an expiration date. You know?
Yes, we all do. And that's the, you know, you probably have heard this is like, let's say somebody's lifetime is 70 years. I'm just using this as an example. I'm believing for much more than that, but let's start from 20 years old to 70 is 50 years. Now, some of us live 50 years, but some of us live the same year 50 times.
Oh, isn't that awful?
And yes, absolutely. But it feels safe. It doesn't feel scary, all the things. And when we get these kind of, oh my God moments, what the hell am I going to do kind of moments, is we like, okay, so I may not have that. So what do I really want to do? But we have to have something that pushes us from being willing to being uncomfortable a lot of times to step into that. Have to have a passion, a mission, a purpose, something that catalysts us, because our human nature is to be easy, yeah. to find the easy path.
Well, and some people think that those dreams, those big dreams, have to be, oh, I want to go to Machu Picchu and I want to climb Kilimanjaro. And you don't have to have dreams like that.
Right.
You know, a big, scary, audacious dream for you is not going to be the same as somebody else. Your luggage looks different than someone
Absolutely.
Else's
luggage. And that comparison thing, it never brings the results that we're looking for. So the first step is switch your thinking to this is going to work for my good. There is an element of compassion and forgiveness for yourself, for others, is always needed to transform from baggage to luggage. Forgiveness is a continual process of learning to let go, to move forward. Getting support and help is another big component. So many times when we are hurt or something, the initial response is to isolate, whether physically or the walls go up emotionally. Have you ever been in a crowded room and been all alone?
Oh,
I have.
Yeah.
And so we put those walls up, we're with people, but I'm not with you. And all of those kind of things happen. So learning to be able to take those steps to not isolate, not DIY it, and just going on the internet and reading everything in the world doesn't help me know how to apply it to me.
ChatGPT is not going to solve all your problems.
Nope. Absolutely not. So all of those things. Oh, the other thing is, this is one of the most important, is if you were taking a road trip, would you drive your car by looking in the rearview mirror all the time?
Absolutely not.
And we try to drive our life looking in the rearview mirror at what's happened to me to determine what's down the road. Now I passed that house. It doesn't mean I'm going to pass it again. And so we look and let's look down the road of what, like if your life was a book, let this be a chapter, not your whole book.
Yeah.
Let it be a paragraph, a page, turn the page.
Yeah.
You have the choice to turn the page, to choose to be different, to get the resources and support to make those choices. With all of that, you can turn your baggage into luggage.
So I was, as you were talking about looking in the rearview mirror, I had an image flash in my head of being at the airport. You know, those moving walkways they have at airports? Mm-hmm. Well, you can choose to walk down that aisle or down that hallway, or you can choose to get on the moving walkway and go faster. So how use that analogy, put us on the moving walkway. How do we move faster?
Well, how do you think you would be walking? You would be moving forward, but if you continue to look backwards, you'd lose your balance.
Yeah.
Because it's moving. You've got to look forward to continue to have momentum. Vision carries us. But if I'm looking at the trauma or something that's happened to me as my future, this is one of my favorite declarations. My past does not determine my future unless I let it.
That's a good declaration.
And so I would say every day, my past does not determine my future. Just because yesterday was not a great day, I don't tend to swear, but you got the picture. Doesn't mean tomorrow needs to be that way. So learning to be able to embrace it with hope, expectation of good, letting go, forgiving. It sounds really simple, but there's a lot in there.
Yeah. Well, when you're going on a trip, when you pack your luggage, it's because you have a destination.
Yes.
So when you're on that moving walkway, you want to make sure it's moving towards the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you're going to your terminal to take off, you do not want to get on the moving walkway that goes to the baggage.
No. Have you ever ended up in the wrong terminal? It's awful.
No, but I have misread the flight information. I thought that my flight was delayed and missed my flight because I thought my flight was delayed.
Yes.
Yeah.
So all of that.
I thought, oh, I have time to hang out in this coffee shop for a little bit and read a book. And then I go at the time I thought I needed to be there and the flight had taken off. That was at the Denver airport, y'all. A lot of bad things happened to me at the Denver airport. That's also the airport that I drove to. The Denver airport is about a 45-minute drive from Denver. And I had pneumonia and I was driving myself to the airport in a white vehicle in January in a snowstorm with pneumonia so that I could get home. It took me 5 days to recover from that trip. I had coworkers come to my door like on Thursday and like just to check to see if I was still alive. Because I managed to call into work on Monday morning, like, I'm not going to make it. And then I slept. Mm-hmm. I slept. And so finally they knocked on the door and they checked on me. And I'm, oh my God, I should have asked them to take me to the doctor.
Yes.
I should have asked them to take me to the doctor, but I didn't because I was a stubborn single woman in my 20s.
Right? And that is the asking for help thing.
Yeah, it's so important. If I had asked somebody in my office to take me to the doctor, I would have felt better faster. Mm-hmm.
I think that would be a whole message right there in that statement.
There you go. Everything you need to learn about asking for help is right there. It's right there. I'm so glad that I'm not single anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, because I have someone to take me to the doctor if mm-hmm. I'm sick now. I'm not saying that marriage is for everybody. I'm just mm-hmm. saying that for me it worked out well.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Oh, I love that moving walkway analogy. I think that I'm going to be using that in the future. So thank you for helping me come up with it. Another analogy that I have, I live on Lake Michigan. So I spend some time at the beach mm-hmm. and I don't know, where do you, you live in Grand Rapids, don't you? Mm-hmm. Okay. So you've been to Lake Michigan.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know what it's like when the waves are coming in and the water mm-hmm. swirling around. So I was standing on the edge of the water line. It was a beautiful day. I was wearing shorts. I wasn't in a swimsuit, so I couldn't get in the water, but I was just standing. I was just standing right there at the edge as the water was swirling around me from the lake because it was really choppy. Mm-hmm. And my feet kept sinking further and mm-hmm. further and further into the sand. And the longer I stood there doing nothing, the deeper I got. Mm-hmm. So in order to get out of that funk, I mm-hmm. had to lift up my feet and start moving. Mm-hmm. If you are standing, if you want to get someplace, you have to actually move towards it. Yes. So you can walk there, you can take the moving escalator, but you cannot stand still. You can't keep reading the same chapter in the book over and over and over again.
Yeah.
I love it. Okay. Give us some more luggage, some luggage and baggage.
Well, those are the four main points of learning how to move forward. And if one of the analogies I also use is, you know, I talked about taking a trip, and one of the ways I explain it is what map are you using? So many times we have been using the map that has been, you're stupid, you're never amount to anything, or all of those self-doubt things that we think, and we're using that map to try to get to our dreams. And so if you were to create a new map, what are some of the things that would be on that map? What would be pit stops? What would be areas of growth? What would be places that you would use to reinforce, to refuel your car? What are pit stops? What are ways that you, what are areas we're going to do? And I love flowers and gardening. I'm learning to be better at it, but you know what, weeds grow. Like, I will clear a brand new soil, put down flowers or plant or, you know, vegetables, and weeds grow faster. Where do they come from? It's like, I didn't plant this. It's like, I didn't expect this, kind of a same feeling. And so we have to continually give maintenance to our mind, to our emotions, to our soul, of pulling the weeds so that what you actually want in your life can grow. It doesn't just happen.
Yeah.
I wished it would, but learning to be able to continually do maintenance and taking times of, why am I in a funk?
Yeah.
What have I been thinking about? And notice those fear thoughts that come up and all of that. So that's another idea.
If you are planting a non-native plant, it takes a lot of love and care and grooming and, you know, nurturing for that plant to survive. And the weeds, because the weeds are native, right? Mm-hmm. The weeds know how to live in the environment. So they're going to keep growing and growing and growing. And If you want that non-native plant, which is that new idea, that dream that you have, mm-hmm. you've got to be proactively picking the weeds.
Until it becomes native.
Until it becomes native. Exactly. Exactly. So you were talking about map and, you know, vision boards are transformational mm-hmm. for a lot of people. I have one on my wall over here. I made it about 5 years ago, and it's actually the last vision board that I actually really made. Anyway, my friend Wendy, Goddess Wendy, she does dream board workshops in the Grand Rapids area. FYI, if you're listening from mm-hmm. Grand Rapids and you want a dream board workshop. Anyway, so this is my dream board, and on it is a green bicycle. Mm-hmm. And I actually just got the green bicycle within the last month. So it took me 5 years to get my green bicycle, but mm-hmm. I have my green bicycle. But back to mapping. I have been doing this process of making these vision boards, these dream boards, for years. My Aunt Rita taught them to me, but she called them treasure maps.
Mm-hmm.
And that idea of treasure mapping your life is so on point. Yes. Really, I mean, when you are making this dream board, you're mapping out what your future is going to look like.
Yeah. And I love the idea of treasure, because we all know that treasure isn't on the top of the ground.
Yeah. Yeah. Treasure. You got to dig for it and you've got to find
yes.
it.
You've got
and
to look for it.
Sometimes it's the timing. Like it wasn't right. Absolutely. It wasn't the right time for me to have my cute little green bicycle. Mm-hmm. Now it's the time for me to have my cute little green bicycle. All right. What else do you want to talk about?
Well, one of the things that I've been working on recently is also what I call empowering habits, and how habits actually define, have begin to define who our identity is. For example, you learning to make bread. Before, your habit was, I don't have time to make bread, or I don't, whatever. It's like, yeah. And so... But now you're motivated and you're beginning to change. Now you may be known as, some people may buy your bread. You know, it's like,
No. And,
well, yeah. Let me use my analogy here.
Okay.
But learning to be able to understand that the little habits that we do actually begin to create our identity. Are we one who has quiet time in the morning? Are we the one that always hits the alarm and is always rushing and frantic and stressed out? You know, it's like those habits. And I'm sure when you got your diagnosis, some of your habits begin to change.
Mm-hmm.
What was important was all, it was changed, and learning how our brain works and how habits. So it is a program that I've recently developed to learn how to create habits of who I want to be. One of the examples I use. So if you were to offer me a cigarette, I would have no problem going, no, thank you. I'm not a smoker. But someone who is trying to quit would say, no, thank you. And they grit their teeth because they're a smoker. But if you're not a smoker, doesn't matter, because you see, the smoker is identity.
Yeah.
And so learning to be able to shift our identity to who you want to be, instead of the limiting thoughts of who we have been told we have to be.
Yeah. I've never been a drinker. I don't like to smoke marijuana because it gives me a hangover. So it's really, and smoking, it isn't appealing mm-hmm. at all. Those things are really easy for me to say no to, mm-hmm. But put a piece of cake in front of me. Not so easy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So everybody has their vice.
We all have our things that they're only, well, as far as cake goes, it's only a vice if it's extreme.
That's
you
true.
Know, smoking and drinking is a little, you know, I drink wine occasionally, but it's never been, I need a glass of wine kind of a feeling, because I use other things to calm me.
Yeah.
I use other activities to bring myself peace and reduce stress than that. And so we all have our, but I'm with you. Me, it's more ice cream. let's eat some ice cream and feel better. So we all have our thing that can, is okay in an increment, but it can, if I'm sitting there with the carton,
yeah,
we mm-hmm. could have a problem.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's talk about marketing. So you know, you have to market your business. So what's your favorite marketing tool, tip, or technique?
I have learned to love videos. It gives me the opportunity to share, because you can share who you are, whatever you're talking about in a very quick way. And it's also things people like is videos. I fought video for a long time. My coach, people on my team kept saying, we've got to do videos. Videos are the new thing. Everybody's doing videos. And I kept going, nah, I can't do videos or lives. Didn't do any of that a while ago. And so my coach said, well, let's do an exercise. What does visibility mean to you? Why is there so much resistance? So we went back and what did visibility mean as a child for me? It meant that I was in trouble is really the only time my name was really called. Oh, wow. You know, when they use your middle name too. Yeah. Now I wasn't in trouble a lot, so that didn't happen, but there was this constant feeling of, or I'm going to be criticized or I'm going to be given work to do. And then when I was pregnant, you know, I wanted to hide and all of those kind of things, the shame and all of the things that were associated with, I mean, what I went through at 15 and what another 15-year-old girl going to high school was going through were not even close to the same. And so that constant feeling. So I am now, remember what I said, the things we learned to survive was staying hidden and not being noticed. Has you ever been the situation where your boss calls you into the office and your stomach drops before you even get there? And
I haven't worked for anybody else in so long.
but me either. But I remember, and almost all the time they were telling me something good, not bad.
Yeah.
But that same thing, sinking gut, is like, oh, what's wrong? And you know, that kind of thing. So all of this is what helped me to survive, but it is not helping me today.
Yeah.
To be visible. So I had to write a new story. What does visibility mean for you today?
Yeah.
And begin to realize that, and whatever marketing you use, that key is in it. What does visibility mean? And how are we, because when I'm sharing my passion, my dream to the world, it's my baby. Are you going to stomp on it? Yeah. And so there's this whole thing of feeling safe to be able to really be who we are and to allow that to be seen. And to me, that's one of the biggest keys with marketing.
Yeah. I love that question. What does visibility mean for me today? And you can replace the word visibility with whatever word that's your baggage from your, from your past.
Absolutely.
And you want to turn it into luggage, whatever word that is. That's preventing you from doing something. All right. So tell us about making videos. How are you doing it? Because this is a skill that people need to learn. So how are you making these videos and what kind of videos are you having the most fun making?
I have a Facebook group called Vibrant Women, and it started as a meetup group in Grand Rapids. And now it's
And then
more
we had
online.
The pandemic and you couldn't
and
be.
And now it's more online. And so, I go live in that group every week, sharing something, inspiration. Last week was how to make confident decisions. How do you do it when, so it's all kinds of practical things, whatever's on my mind that week. And so I go live in the group and then, that's the main way I use videos. I also did, all of my coaching content. I have a lot of groups. And so I would meet, like I'd have the same group I'd meet with three times with different people, you know, different people in the group. And I'm reteaching the same thing over and over. So I put it all on video, all the curriculum, so that when I'm in the group, I'm actually coaching. They've already got the content. So did a lot in the last 2 years, lots and lots of recordings. So my
this is a relevant question. Do you find that that your clients who are in that group coaching program actually watch the videos?
Absolutely.
Good for you and good for them.
Every time. Yeah.
Awesome.
And some of my tools is, I do a lot of recording with Zoom, as a lot of people do, but I also utilize StreamYard for a lot of my broadcast. So those are some practical tools. I don't do a whole lot of video editing.
If you're going live, you don't really need
or other things. But and then my podcast also now has added video. It's not just audio. So that's where more of the video editing would come in. But I don't do a lot of that. I want it to be as much as organic and natural thing as it is. If I say a word incorrectly, that's, it's just life. And so just being more me and being happy with that.
I love making blooper reels. I think they're fun.
They are always fun. Yes.
I like having conversations. So I prefer to do interview style. I don't like to get in front of the camera and talk. I like to do interviews. So maybe that's a limiting belief I need to get over.
I'm with you. I had a hard time doing it at first, but I began to, for me, one of the things that helped is visualize when I'm looking at the camera that I'm looking into somebody's eyes and talk to their heart. And
yeah, I've heard people say, put your ideal client avatar in front of your camera.
I just look at the camera and have pictured that with my intention ahead of time that I'm speaking from the heart. Which is my whole motivation. So that has helped me be able to, but I reply, one of my biggest strengths is asking questions and having people reply and that dialogue that occurs when you're a coach, that's one of your skills. And so when that's not happening on the other side, it is a bit of a challenge.
Yeah. So what from this conversation, because a lot of people think, oh, video, that means I have to put it on TikTok or YouTube. Or Instagram. You are making videos for your clients. They're in your private group. They're in your coaching programs. You're using video to enhance what you're already doing. So you don't have to be a TikTok star.
No.
Make video.
You don't. And YouTube makes it really easy. You can put things on there if you wish, but you don't. Let's get rid of the have to's.
Yeah.
And let's choose what do I want to do and what is possible. And if I'm not doing it, what are our hindering? What are our beliefs that's hindering us if it is? Now, I'm not going to be on TikTok. My primary audience is not on TikTok. So that's a choice for wherever you happen to be. Mm-hmm. So anyway.
Yeah.
And then get a team. You don't have to do it by yourself.
Well, and this is something that I have been working on myself lately. If you're not finding your ideal client avatar where you are, you need to go someplace else. Mm-hmm. So that's something that I've been working on lately is finding where my someplace else is to find my ideal client mm-hmm. avatar. And I apologize to those of you listening who you think, I just have insulted you. No, you're my ideal client avatar if I'm working with you now. but I need to go someplace else to find more people like you.
Yes.
So that's been difficult. And I also wanted to add on to what you said about podcasting and you're now doing video. If you are listening to this episode right now and you want to be a podcaster or you have a podcast and you are not taking advantage of YouTube's new podcast feature, you need to start doing it now. If you go to your playlists, you will find that there is now an option for podcast and you can turn your playlist into a podcast. And then YouTube is going to treat your playlist like a podcast and it's going to get different exposure to different people. So if you are not turning your podcast into video now, which you can easily do with a tool like Headliner, mm-hmm. You need to be doing that, listener, because YouTube is about to take off with podcasts. All right. That's my advice. And I'm going to turn that little video into a short because I'm repurposing this podcast into a short about why you need to be on YouTube with your podcast. And Donna can do the same thing with some of her lives. Mm-hmm. She can absolutely take some of those really good lives, the ones mm-hmm. that have a message that anybody needs mm-hmm. to hear. And she can take those, download them and upload them to YouTube. I mean, you can repurpose your content all day long. That's my little addition to the conversation on video. I'm a huge fan of video, as you in my audience knows. All right, we need to wrap up. So this is your moment of gratitude. For whom or what are you most grateful?
I'm most grateful for my relationship with God. That's what I'm most grateful for. It has made the biggest impact in my life.
Thanks for tuning in to Gratitude Geek, the relationship marketing podcast for solopreneurs building lasting, genuine relationships with clients, colleagues, and community. Make sure to visit gratitudegeek.com for the show notes, where you can find links to all the groovy resources we've mentioned, including ways to connect with our guest, Donna Tashjian. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review on Audible, iTunes, Good Pods, or your preferred podcast player so you never miss an episode. Our theme music is Track 14 by Rev Rock and Solely. I'm your host, Candice Rodarte, reminding you that gratitude is like manure. It's just a pile of poo until you spread it around. Stay groovy, my friends.
Stay groovy, my friends.
I know we can make